morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team at Prudential Now Realty, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I would like to thank our hosts and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how have things been with you?
Well, let's see. Other than the dust storm the other day.
A dust storm or a firestorm?
Kind of both.
Kind of both. It did get a little scary there. Once again, though, man, thanks to all of our emergency personnel and responders and those listeners got right out there. And, man, they really took care of business. It got a little scary there for a while.
And I walked out of the store, Lance, and all that smoke was coming. I knew it was over in that area. That's actually where my house was. So, fortunately, it was on the other side of the canyon. But definitely, hopefully, everyone's okay after that.
Yeah, and it looked like they were able to, you know, there was about 52 homes, it said, that were threatened. And they were able to save all of those with pretty much minor damage to some fences and some decks. So, once again, yeah, thanks to all our firefighters and police officers that were out there helping direct that traffic and work to make that happen. So back to business. It's been a little bit crazy. You were hearing, as always, we have with us our in-house lending expert, Mr. Tom Coyne from Sterling Bank. Tom, it's been a little crazy in your world too, huh?
It really has. You know, rates are all over the place. We've seen multiple rate changes generally daily. So when I quote a rate, I usually always have to tell them right now, hey, this is as of right now. So call back an hour, it could be different. It's just how volatile the market's been.
Perfect. Well, we always like to start off with our crazy national real estate story and kind of extreme property story, as we like to call it. So on this week's list, we have, and we have the name David Axelrod calls Chicago home. Now, David Axelrod, he is a political and election advisor in Chicago and familiar for the past two Democratic presidencies for former President Bill Clinton and Barack Obama.
So most of our listening audience, he's probably not the most popular guy
in
the world.
No. I thought I would report that that he is considering a potential move, it looks like, getting rid of one of those condos in Chicago. Now, purchased in 2002 for $950,000 in the Lake Point Towers. What that gets you, $1.25 million, gets you a 3,200-square-foot, three-bedroom, four-bath home with views of Lake Michigan in a condo tower. So kind of interesting. It actually looked like, compared to some of the New York ones we report on for $10, $12, $80 million, this one actually looked like a pretty decent space for that money. So kind of interesting to see. We don't hear a lot of crazy politics coming out of Chicago very often. But in this case, definitely there was speculation that he had accepted a new job with MSNBC and NBC News. So probably spending a little time outside of Chicago.
That's like taking on a job as the new chef on the Titanic.
We are crossing out of the real estate realm and into another potential show that we will let the experts on that handle.
Yes.
So as always, we like to approach kind of our local real estate. And I really thought this week I would start off on the local real estate news front with some of our pick three properties, because I'm going on a river theme this week. Mm. We have put on some amazing, amazing new property, and they all have are associated with our local rivers. Pick number one that I have this week is a new listing that we have at 94008 North Star, and that is in West Richland. And this is right on the Yakima River. So this is 5.3 acres of riverfront property. We are talking a beautiful house that's 3,371 square feet, three bedrooms, three baths, plus a bonus room. And it's got a beautiful, beautiful yard. And literally, you walk right down to the river. So this is absolutely paradise property. Last time I looked at the supply of new riverfront property, they're not making any more riverfront property. So this is a rare opportunity to get that potential property. And this house is priced at $545,000. So for getting that much acreage, that much riverfront, it really is one of those properties where you can have it all. There's room for the shop. There's room for the pasture. You've got a beautiful house, and it's right on the river. So if anybody's been looking for that type of property, please let me know. Listing number two, our pick number two, is 1831, and this is Artemis Ridge. This is a five-bedroom, and this is a five-bedroom house, and it overlooks the Yakima River. Beautiful, beautiful property. Sits up on the bluff. You access it off of a bombing range up there in West Richland, and that takes you back to Artemis Ridge, and this house is 4,000 square feet. 4,000 square foot home, built in 2003, stucco, amazing deck off of the back, and you literally look right out at just a beautiful bend of the Yakima River and really kind of get that whole overview of the Tri-Cities. Gorgeous, gorgeous views for a new home, Rambler basement, and this property is priced at $460,000.
Wow.
We're talking $115 a square foot for river views and panoramic territorial views. And this house is clean, 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 super well maintained, upgraded kitchen. It's really got that whole entertainment house you've been looking for. Now, pick number three, we're going to go to a different price range. I'm not going to put you on the river, but I'm going to put you near the river, continuing the theme this week.
Okay.
And this is 1622 Howell Avenue. This is North Richland, literally blocks to the river. This is a three-bedroom, one-bath house. It is the Rambler basement, 2,800 square feet, over a quarter-acre lot in North Richland, so it's got a huge yard. Gorgeous property, and we're talking a price point here of $160,000. That's $56 a square foot to put you in North Richland, close by the river. You can walk to shopping. You're close by Hanford, WSU. I mean, really, this location is stellar, and this house is in great, great shape and priced at $160,000.
And you're very close to the river because that's where I grew up in that
exactly.
I think that one will sell quickly.
We're super excited about that well-maintained house, and it shows very, very well. So that is our pick three this week. Those are new listings that have come on the market recently and really kind of our local real estate highlight this week. So one of the things this week I wanted to talk about is the dreaded home inspection. And it really is what people do not look forward to in a transaction. However, if you are a buyer, it is one of the ways that you're protecting yourself in a transaction. And as a seller, we're going to talk about things you can do to potentially avoid some pitfalls with that. So people always ask, what is the inspection contingency? How does that work? So what it is an addendum to our regular purchase and sale agreement, and it creates what we call a contingency. And it reads exactly, word for word, on the forms that we generally use. This is Form 35 in our state forms, and it says inspection contingency. This agreement is conditioned on the buyer's subjective satisfaction with inspections of the property and the improvements on the property. You know, we can just hold the farm right there and finish the show talking about that one sentence.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a lot more to the addendum I want to cover and some highlights I want to hit. One of the things, the biggest thing in that first sentence and what gets people sometimes is that contingency is to the buyers, and the key word there is subjective satisfaction. So buyers, based upon that contingency in general, can have an inspection of the property. In this addendum, we write in there's a time frame, and how it works is it says this inspection contingency shall conclusively be deemed waived, meaning the buyer's waiving it unless
Within blank number of days after mutual acceptance, the buyer gives notice approving the inspection or disapproving the inspection and terminating the agreement, or that the buyer needs additional inspections. So what can happen there is you put in that time frame. If you have not responded within that time frame, the buyer is waiting the inspection. So that's a very important time frame for buyers to be aware of. Now, that subjective satisfaction, that is huge, because a buyer could have an inspection, the inspector, and this is probably the hardest one for sellers to deal with, is throughout that inspection, there's nothing glaringly wrong, but overall, maybe the buyer's changed their mind. Maybe they've found another property. I mean, we don't know. There could be hundreds of reasons. But the worst response that can happen is that the buyer overall looks at the inspection and says, overall, it's just not what I thought. And they don't give any specific reason. They're not required to give a specific reason.
Mm.
And then they back out of that contract. So it can really become an emotional roller coaster in that time period, because now you think you've sold your house, you're excited, you start to make plans, and then all of a sudden you're left without a buyer. So that's probably the most difficult one to deal with, but based upon the language of the inspection contingency, it's within the buyer's right if that's how it's written to do that. And so that's something that we have to be aware of could happen. Either they're giving notice approving that, disapproving it, conducting additional inspections, or, as our contract says, propose repairs or modifications to the agreement. So one of the things, a buyer will do a home inspection. There might be 10 things on that inspection that the inspector said was wrong or there was deferred maintenance. One of the options they can do is they can look at that list and they could ask the seller to remedy all items on that list. That could be one option. They could also look at that list and say, you know, 7 of these are maintenance items, but 3 of these are life-threatening. You know, there is electricity firing out of the outlets, you know, and arcing out loud. This is something that is like a life-threatening issue or a major structural issue, you know. I mean, it could be that there's a beam under the house and it is rotting out and starting to break. So they might then take a look at that list and say, well, we only want 3 of these 7 things to be fixed, and then they could propose that back to the seller. Or sometimes the buyer will look at an inspection. It'll be very clean. The house is in great condition. They might just approve the property and not ask for anything. And then another option that we see is, we'll talk about this after the break, but the fourth option that can happen is negotiating a credit. And we're coming up on our first break. When we get back, we're going to talk about negotiating that credit, what to look out for in the home inspection, and then Tom's going to maybe explain to us a little bit about how that home inspection might not be like an appraisal is.
And we'll be right back on Newstalk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been here discussing a lot of local issues and really kind of jumping into the home inspection today. We've been talking about specific language that comes out of our inspection addendums to our purchase and sale agreements, what that means, how those get negotiated, what the options are for people. After we talk to Tom a little bit on the lending side, we're going to come back. I'm going to go over some common items that home inspectors are looking for that you can prepare for and take care of ahead of time. It's also a good list for buyers to be looking at as they're walking through looking at homes, so they can kind of tell if homes have been well maintained or not. But first, Tom, give us an update on the lending side. What's going on with you at Sterling, and what do we need to know about these inspections?
Well, a lot of times when I'm meeting with people and we're discussing their loan and talking about the process, people confuse the inspection with an appraisal. So we do not require inspections. We'll rarely ever ask to see one. But I absolutely recommend people get an inspection on every home purchase, even new construction. You just never know what you might find. It's certainly better to uncover any potential issues prior to closing. So I generally try to explain it like this. An inspection is when an inspector goes into a home, gets down on their hands and knees, and thoroughly inspects the property for any potential issues. An appraiser is someone who just walks through a home, notates the home's characteristics and features, finds comparable homes that have sold recently, and then helps them determine a value based on that research they did. So an appraisal is very, very important to both the lender and the buyer. A lender, of course, wants to know that the house is worth what they're lending on it. The buyer wants to be assured the home is worth what they're paying for it. So it serves a very important function in our lending process. But when we order an appraisal, we're required to order through a non-interested third party called an appraisal management company. That company will then randomly select an appraiser to go to the property to give us a value. The appraiser gets a copy of the purchase and sale agreement, nothing else. And I won't even actually know who the appraiser is until the report is completed and is delivered to my office. So it's set up like this so that there's no collusion between lenders and appraisers. It's been this way for about 3 years or so.
And that was kind of one of the changes as we came through the national lending crisis. That was one of the things they set up a little bit differently.
You know, at first, that change really had a lot of kinks and issues, but over the last few years, I think all of them have been kind of resolved, and everything's going pretty smooth. It's a good rule to have.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, sometimes, and correct me if I'm wrong, I know we're kind of splitting hairs a little bit here. Now, an FHA appraisal, they'll look at a few different things than maybe a conventional appraisal would, right?
Yeah, there's a lot more requirements for an FHA appraisal. FHA is just a type of loan program. They just kind of go more in depth. So one thing that we see a lot on older homes built before 76 is if there's peeling paint.
Oh, that's huge. I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah, we see that a lot. So that's one thing that people can be aware of is prior to listing, if their home is built prior to 78, making sure that they have rectified any peeling paint issues.
Yeah. Because of the lead.
Yep, you got it 100%.
Exactly. But let's say the buyer is getting a conventional loan on that same property, that wouldn't get called out.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
So an appraiser does a search of what they determine to be comparable homes sold that have sold recently. Based on the homes that have sold in an area, the appraiser then comes up with a value. There's several things we review to determine that appraisal is giving us an accurate determination of that value. The first thing we always look at are the comparable homes that the appraisers use. We want to see generally the following out of these comparable homes. First is, how close are these comparable homes? We like to see homes that are within a mile. If you go further than that, it's hard to say that a home is comparable if it's in a completely different area than our subject property. For example, like say homes in Hanson Park will likely be worth maybe a little bit more than homes in Chapel Hill out in West Pasco. Or for unique or rural properties, it's sometimes necessary that the appraiser actually uses comps that are further than a mile away just because of the limited number of comparables that they have to work with that have sold recently. So I've seen appraisers use comps in Finley for a home that's in Benton City. Those two areas are very similar to each other, and so we'll find that acceptable as long as they give us adequate notation of why they went further than, say, a mile or so. Another thing we always want to look at with these comps is how recent were they sold. We like to see homes that are sold within the last 6 months. This gives us an idea of what value is today, not 3 years ago. So a home that was 2 years old or sold 2 years ago isn't a good indicator of value. We also want to see one or two homes that are currently listed for sale. It gives us an idea of what the market's doing. If you have a comparable that is maybe pricing out higher than our subject property and it's been for sale for 400 days, then...
Right, you laugh, McKay. You keep laughing over there.
Then that might not be a good comp, and that might say our house is worth a little bit less. Now, another thing we'll want to see is how close are these comparables in the size to our subject property. If we have a subject that is 2,500 square feet and the appraiser is using 1,500 square foot comps, we'll request to see more comparables to support the appraised value. We really need to see homes that are close in size. Also, if we have a 2,000 square foot Rambler, we don't want to see just 2,000 square foot two-story homes. So a Rambler is traditionally going to be more valuable than a two-story. So a mix is okay, but we definitely want to see some other Ramblers in there. Last thing that we're going to look for, and this isn't an all-inclusive list, but I'm just kind of giving the main ones, is the quality of construction. If all the comparables have granite, tile floors, vaulted ceilings, stucco, and our subject property is a manufactured home, we're probably going to want to see some new comps.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of a difference.
No, you really want to try to stay with like value. You're right.
So we could go all day on appraisals and inspections. Obviously, we don't have a whole lot of time for that. But appraisals play a very important role to both the buyer and to the lender throughout the lending process.
And another thing to remember, too, the tax value of your house is not the same as an appraisal.
Now, the assessed value is generally going to be lower than the appraised value. And, sometimes I'm doing a refinance and the appraisal comes in higher than what the people think. And they think, oh, no, are my taxes going to go up? You know, we don't ever give the appraisal to the treasurer. So that's not the case. But, yeah, completely two different things.
I was about to make some comment about recent news stories and communication monitoring and say that they already had the appraisal, but I'll never mind. I just made it.
Who's your cell phone with?
Yeah, if you use Verizon, they already have the appraisal.
Okay. They already knew the name of our firstborn child.
Oh. Okay, so, well, that is great, great information about appraisals. Very, too, really timely for when you're pricing your property and what the value of your property is. It really, I wrote down a note while you were speaking about not using comps over 6 months. You know, really, that's not a good indication of where the market is, where the market's going. We talk to folks about that all the time when we're helping them price property, even prior to the appraisal. I really try to follow that appraisal process as close as possible when we're listing and marketing property, because we know that at some point, if someone does get a loan on one of the properties we're selling, we're going to have to go through that appraisal process and support that value and be very, very close to what the appraiser is going to say. So that's a good review for us, too, on how we price properties and some of the things to look at. So I really appreciate you bringing that today.
No problem.
Another thing Tom said is that the appraisal is a determination of value. It is not a determination of condition of the property. It does not tell you if termites are eating the structure from below. It does not tell you if the bathtubs are draining directly into the crawl space and are not hooked up to the lines. These things happen, and we've seen them happen. I'm not making up those stories. Those are things I have seen happen. And so the home inspector really digs deep into that property and lets you know exactly what's going on there. A couple of the things, one of the things to talk about with home inspections, and I wrote down the most common items that I can see. One of the things for sellers to note is the shorter that home inspection list is, the better off a buyer is going to feel about the property when they do their own home inspection. Number one thing we see on inspections all the time is failing grout lines behind kitchen sinks and next to bathtubs. That grout can dry out. There's some settling. It cracks, especially when it's right behind a sink. You're splashing water. If there's a crack there in the grout, that water is just running right through that grout to behind that into the wood, and then it can swell and expand the wood. So keeping that grout sealed or recalked is a huge one.
Tubs and showers and toilets, too.
Yes, exactly. Right up next to tubs and showers, that's another huge, huge one. So that's one of the biggest items we see. Doing that simple maintenance item can make your report look a lot cleaner. The next one is cracked caulking around windows and siding. You know, shrinkage of that caulking around your windows and siding gives kind of that dirt, wind, energy place to escape and get into your house. That comes up on reports all the time, so we're always dealing with that. Number three that we see most often that can be rectified prior to an inspector coming out is those shrubs and bushes were very small when you put them in the ground from the flower garden 5 years ago. Now they are growing into your siding because they've expanded. And so what happens is when a bush or shrub grows up next to a house and then touches the siding, that really is just a conduit for insects and water and moisture intrusion, because now it can climb up there into your siding. So really having the landscaping cut away and trimmed away from the house is we see it, I mean, on almost every inspection report. So that's another big thing to really take a look at. Also, bigger trees, yeah, kind of under that same category, branches rubbing on the roofs tend to, in the wind, sway and really take out the shingles. John, you're raising your hand. You've done this.
We were smart. We planted our willow tree far enough away, but I remember that Allstate commercial where the bald-headed guy says, willow trees are very invasive. We have a neighbor that planted one like 5 feet from their house, and now the house is practically off the ground.
Yes, it really...
It looks for water lines.
It really, really can. So good advice there. The other thing that happens with settling and dirt, especially in our area, and a lot of irrigation water, is making sure the grading of your landscaping drains water away from the house. What tends to happen is that dirt and landscaping will settle. It'll create a kind of a divot or a swell that the water sits in instead of running away from the house, and then it's just that much easier for it to get into your foundation, your crawl space vent. So making sure that you're keeping that slope the first few feet away from your house.
It's like moisture is kind of a common theme here.
Yes.
Or puddles with mosquitoes, West Nile, that whole thing.
Exactly right. Moisture is probably one of the biggest issues in managing that we deal with in home inspections.
You know, kind of adjusting sprinklers so they're not hitting the house. That's probably another big one you see.
That's a huge one, too, because what happens is it breaks down the paint on the siding. Then once that paint, that protective layer of paint is gone, that water starts to wick up in that siding, and then it expands and breaks the siding. So that's one of the biggest things that we see, too. One that you might not be aware of, and it usually doesn't come up until we do something like a home inspection like this, but can be rectified. And what it is called is it is having debris in your crawl space. Traditionally, crawl spaces don't always get cleaned out as well as they can. Maybe there's leftover wood or remnants from the builder under there in the crawl space. What that is those remnants of wood and cardboard in a crawl space is just a fantastic condition and creates what they call cellulose for termites to feed on. So if there's a piece of wood that is sitting in the crawl space, termites have access to come up in. That wood is in contact with the dirt. They come up in, they look for that wood. Now they've contacted that wood, and it just gives them another avenue into the house. Another thing that happens a lot of times is some contractors don't remove the forms around the pier pads. So they pour the cement pier pads that the structure sits on underneath the house. And if they don't remove that cardboard form, once again, earth to wood contact is a big no-no, and that's another access. So that needs to be removed from those pier pads so that you have the protection of that cement between the wood and the earth. And so that we see that a lot. There's a lot of times where homeowners, after the fact, are having to clean that debris out of the crawl spaces, or worse than that, it was a conducive condition that caused termites to come. So we really, really look out for that. Our local home inspectors are great about finding that, looking for that, and that's because they're great at doing that. As a seller, you want to have that rectified ahead of time. This one just all the time comes out, and that is having your heating and air conditioning serviced every 6 months. Inspectors are looking for that. And if not professionally having that done, if you were going to sell, we would recommend that you have that professionally done prior to selling so you have those receipts and that paper trail. But also making sure that prior to home inspections and prior to putting your house on the market, that you've cleaned those units and installed fresh filters. Because home inspectors, there's nothing worse than seeing a totally clogged filter that they know has stressed out that system and caused maybe a longer-term problem.
Well, that's really a sign or an indicator of deferred maintenance.
That's exactly right. And so we always put in that same sentence when I'm walking through homes, too, I'm actually always checking the return air vents to see how much dirt is on those. So as a seller, you would want to also make sure you've cleaned that return air vent, because in our climate, fire, dust, you know what type of things can happen. And so that is a big, big one, changing those filters. One of the things you can do, and many of our sellers do this, is as a seller, and not as many people do this, and there's pros and cons, and it would be an entire another show to talk about, but one of the things you can do as a seller is have a pre-listing inspection. And we do that a lot. If we see something that says, you know what, this house, you should just have a pre-inspection now, check out all of these problems so that you have a good working list to fix. You can fix those items prior to us getting into an offer with a buyer. And then that way, once the buyer does their inspection and you have kind of that confidence knowing that you set your price based upon that, and that they're not going to find any surprises because you already found them and handled them. One of the advantages, too, that can do is keep somebody in a deal where if something is fixed ahead of time, a buyer, you know, disclosed that it was fixed, they know that it happened, but it was fixed. What's nice is they're not getting a big, scary report. When the summary page of defects is more than a page and becomes pages, that's when we start to have concern. We like the summary page to be a couple bullet items, hopefully just minor maintenance items, and then we can continue to negotiate through that. So it is a big part of the transaction. We work really, really hard during that time of the transaction. We have amazing service providers. I can't tell you enough how much our handyman, roofer, painters, plumbers spend a lot of time giving us estimates and working on those repairs. I can't thank all of them enough because without them, we couldn't do these transactions. So it's a big, big portion of what happens after the fact. It's one of those things when we say there's 29 things after we get an offer that has to be done. You know, what can happen is this inspection process can end up being 5, 6, 7 different service providers and touches during that transaction. So that's one of the things we really specialize in, helping manage that and get through that process. If anybody has any questions about this, which inspectors to use and kind of the things to look out. It's funny to think it's kind of like cleaning your house before the house cleaner comes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need to inspect your house before the inspector comes. And so we can help give some people some tips to make that process go easier. As always, I'm around this weekend. I'm working. You can get a hold of us anytime. You can go to thekenmoreteam.com to help search for homes. And you could always contact me anytime on my cell phone at 727-8977. Tom, what's the best office number for people to get a hold of you at?
You can call me at 783-7300 or go check out my website at tomcoinhomeloans.com.
All right, sounds good. And as always, we will be right back here next week, and I believe talking about windows, window cleaning, window installation. We've got some amazing guests joining us next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.